This is Retrobix After Hours.
Listening public, and thank you for donating your delightful ears to another special episode of Rack Addicts After Hours. 101's a friendly number, as was 100 last time. We have an honoured guest with us today, the other half of Rack Addicts, one half of Cause for Concern. It's Mark, or you may know him as Caesar. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for getting me on your little show. It's been threatened about for many years, and I'm just very happy to be here.
You've been hiding.
I have.
Hiding away, not in this country. How dare you?
Correct.
But we've got you here at last. You're here, and we're going to do the CODcast. I'll have some questions for you later. Your interrogation will happen. But I think Pete has briefed you on the show running.
Yes.
So we got to know what you've been doing this week.
Well, I have been packing my studio up in preparation for moving it back to Bulgaria, which is where I reside now with my girlfriend, and got back into the country last Monday, I think it was, and just been busy packing it up. And obviously Pete's been around and helping me, and then today we actually took it up to the depot, which is going to be shipping it back to Bulgaria. So it's all done, arriving in Sofia in the next couple of 3 weeks. So yeah, just happy about it leaving, and hopefully it arrives there in one piece.
Fingers crossed. It certainly looked like some dense Tetris that you did in there.
Well, that's all thanks to this man here.
This Mr. Man.
So Pete's just been a fantastic help over the years, just with everything studio and getting my stuff together. And he was a great help in packing up the case today and sending it off. So yeah,
it certainly looks the business. Can you quickly rehash the story of those crates?
Yes.
Sad and nerdy, but it's really cool.
Back in the early 80s, a company I used to work for used to ship mainframe components or mainframe computers from the USA to the UK for reselling, secondhand or third party as it was called. And because it was so heavy and valuable, it was shipped in these large, very well constructed shipping crates, and we used to repurpose them for other things. And the particular crates that I had two of had been used as stage artifacts, let's say, back in my prog rock days.
All I'm thinking is various parts of the Spinal Tap stages. That's all that's in my head right now.
Usual sort of stage stuff. It's just wood and it's matte black, and you can put things on it. I think we actually had a massive stone bust on one of them, which was just hanging
just
around
because.
Where we had our rehearsal studios, and we used to cart it on stage. Over the years, I've just hung on to them. So when Mark was suggesting that he needed to move everything to Bulgaria, I just thought that one of those would suit the purpose of providing protection for his equipment.
Well, it worked absolutely perfectly. I mean, the way the boxes kind of went in there, it was kind of made for this journey back to Sofia with the equipment.
Lovely. Well, it'll all get there safe. One thing I do need to ask both of you, how long have you known each other? How do you know each other? Why? When did Cause for Concern happen? When did Rack Addicts become a thing? When did they intermingle? Did they? Who are you? Where am I?
Well, I think it stems from the heady days of the Acid House.
Correct.
Basically, end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, through mutual friends, we were introduced. We were sort of ending up at various parties and things like that. Mark was always into DJing and very early on into production as well. And he was sort of establishing his studio at that time. And I used to try and put events on. I wasn't a great promoter as such. And Mark was always kind enough to come and DJ for me on occasions. And I used to see you quite regularly over the years. And Mark was sort of having a lot of success with Cause for Concern.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really sort of successful drum and bass. What would you call it? Because they're not groups.
Well, I mean, we started...
Collective?
Yeah, collective, I guess. Boy band.
Heartthrobs, both.
I mean, it was four of us to start with. We kind of got together. We had a few studios. We put them together and we started writing music, and we got signed to Moving Shadow very early on in our career, which was a great help, which was a big drum and bass label back then. We started to gather a bit of notice from the scene. Yeah, everything sort of started from there in about sort of 98, 99, mm-hmm. something like that. And I was obviously knowing people. I hadn't seen him for a long time, but we had a kind of close net of friends, just some old friends from back in the day. And we just kept on bumping into each other, you know, at various events. You know, Pete was crazy about his lasers and obviously his...
still is,
of course. And you know, his enthusiasm about writing music and studios. So, you know, we had a common interest and it was just nice to... I mean, when was the next time we met up? It was, we were talking about it the other day. It had been many years.
Yes.
And then we met up at some
party where I was actually doing the lights and
lasers.
That's
right. Yeah. Funnily enough.
And I'd seen Mark intermittently and I sort of had a gist of what he was doing with his sort of music, but I wasn't sort of in constant contact with him. And then about 7 years ago, I sort of ran into him at this event that I was doing the lighting for. And in the course of our conversation, I happened to mention that I'd got into modular and Mark's ears pricked up and he literally, I don't know if it was the next day or very short order, Mark was round to check out the modular.
It didn't take long. No.
What era of your modularing was that? What kind of scale of case had you achieved at that point?
I think I only had...
Dofer case.
Yeah, Dofer inexpensive case, which was... full, I think, and then maybe another Dofer case with a couple of bits in it.
I remember lots of Pittsburgh oscillators and filters and LFOs, which you still have, but
yes.
That's my... Oh, and a Metropolis as well.
I'd gone mad on the Pittsburgh modular stuff because it had that...
That's 19... still your top row.
Well, I just like the 1950s retro kind of look.
They're the dymo tape lettering on them and the original.
Yeah, I was kind of more drawn by the aesthetics than possibly the sound. I was still into a voyage of exploration. I mean, I would say it wasn't the early days of modular because modular's obviously been going for quite some time, but it was still kind of early on. It was still very obscure at that time and there was far less retailers doing it and far less people getting involved.
Let's take a pause before we get too into the weeds of the modular stuff because that's where the bulk of my questions live. We were doing weekly things and we rambled. Pete, you got to update us on things that you've been doing apart from shipping Tetris.
Yep,
if anything.
Apart from Mark and I's endeavours to get stuff packed up and exported to Bulgaria, I've been stimulating my new fetish, which is for sourdough bread.
Good man. I love a bit of sourdough. Where did that come from? That's a bit left field.
I hadn't experienced it or even tasted it or come across it before for whatever reason. And my daughter, who was away on location, I want to say a couple of months ago, just came back with this loaf that someone had presented to her. And it was just left in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Then she'd gone off again. And I was just sort of eyeing it up going, well, I really should do something with it. Maybe I'll pop it in the toaster. And I wasn't really aware that it was sourdough until I actually started consuming it and made the assumption either this has gone off very bad or it's sourdough. And I just really got into it and I polished that loaf off and I noted the information on the packaging and realized that it was from quite far north in the UK,
right,
and not a practical place where I could go and...
And so began Pete's journey to Scotland to find the ultimate toast.
So I started sampling the delights of more local suppliers.
Right.
I tried the large supermarket, which is quite close, and they've got some varieties, but it mass-produced bread, and it was okay, not quite the standard of the initial loaf. And then I tried the local bakers here, and it was okay again, but it wasn't great. And then I eventually found a... It's an artisan bakery, but they seem to distribute through market stalls primarily.
Oh, yeah.
And I found one in Guildford.
Under that big archy thing?
The Tunsgate.
Yeah. No, I know that. They do really good stuff.
Yes. So they have what they describe as a classic sourdough, and it's pretty much the same as the ones that...
On those round ones.
Well, it's slightly oblong-ish.
Yeah.
But it's got all the ingredients. It's got the almost sort of, I don't know how you describe it, large bubble. So it's almost croissant-y in some respect.
Yeah, what do they call it? It's an open crumb, I think, is the...
Is that the technical term? Yes. So it's got that texture. It's got the really distinctive sourdough taste, and it's great. And then ironically, I have bought another one just this last weekend gone, and then I came home to find two more that my daughter had mentioned to someone else on the team that she works with that I was really into it, and they went, oh, here you go, I've got, we were just there, here's some more. So I, this week I had a selection.
That is the opposite of a problem. I love it. That's so unexpected.
But as I say, I have my local supplier now, and I can get into Guildford promptly and grab it. They're not cheap, but
no, they can get a bit pricey,
but I think for the pleasure of having a high quality bread, you have to fork out a bit.
Well, one of the weirder bits of podcast listening, I now must ask, how do you take your toast?
In the respect
or your bread in general, what do you, what's your preparation for your sourdough?
It's basically, if they offer a slicing service, which the current supplier doesn't, it's just here you go, here's your loaf, I will have it sliced if that's available. If not, I have to attack it with my bread knife.
Can be a bit tricky.
And try and endeavour to not cut it too thickly so that it'll actually fit in the toaster.
Yeah.
I try and toast it just prior to it getting a bit over charcoaled or...
You're not a warm bread person, are you?
No, it's not just warm. I want crispy.
Good, good. Mark, weigh in on this. Are you a warm bread or do you actually toast?
I toast.
Good,
yeah,
good.
I toast.
Man.
I warm a bun up in the oven if I'm having a burger or something like that.
Yeah.
Nice and crispy.
Yeah.
And then I have my cholesterol reducing spread, which is
delightful.
Tastes buttery, but apparently it's doing me good.
I'm hungry now. Disaster. Next step, I can only assume, is you're going to start and try and make it.
No, I do actually have one of those automated...
Oh, you got a bread maker?
Bread maker that I've had for some time, but I've never used it. Like a lot of my...
It's only a matter of time.
Kitchen equipment. I haven't got kitchen equipment gas, but I could not yet, no. I actually staved off that particular, but I can see how you could go there.
Yeah, totally. Mine tends to form in the fancy Japanese knife kind of department.
Yeah.
A bit of a thing for Japanese knives.
I've actually got one in, it's not a proper Japanese one, but it's that style of knife that I can't pronounce what they're called.
It could be, there's many. There's Santoku, most popular one.
I think it's one of those. You know, it's got a kind of distinctive flat, long, and it's just got that kind of very...
That's probably a Santoku then. Quite a drop on the, on the very end.
Yeah, that's it. The sort of bowed, I don't know what you call it. It's not pointy, isn't it? It's sort of curved.
I know what you mean.
Front end.
Yeah. But, so it's been a week of sourdough for
Yes,
Pete.
Yes.
Nice one. It's been a week of board games for Ben, indulging the analog flavor, not playing so much on the Switch. But there's a good one that I've been enjoying once I played it once and it was great. Escape the Dark Castle. It's like a little dungeon crawler, I guess, but in card game format. Pretty good. If you're into your board games or your tabletop games, I would recommend checking it out. Kind of a narrative thing. You've got these really big cards which will be kind of an event, like you've been attacked by a horde of skeletons. But it's good fun and nice and quick. Do you remember I mentioned that game that I was playing called Far Away, which is like a space exploration thing?
I think you did. Was it something that you... Was it up to four players or was it only two?
Just two, yeah. The co-op one where you're not supposed to talk to each other, which is kind of strange. But that takes probably 10-15 minutes just to set it up because there's so much stuff. But it's nice to have a smaller game where you can be ready to go in just a few minutes.
And how many players is this one?
Two, I think, six.
Between two and six?
Yeah.
So you can be relatively social with it. You're allowed to talk to each other.
You are in this one. It's all about kind of reading cards, telling the story, and it's a cooperative one. So it's good fun.
I haven't played board games since, I think, my children sort of badgered me into playing Monopoly.
There are many better options than Monopoly
I know,
these days.
I sort of generated a disdain for that particular game in my...
I'm not sure if anyone actually likes it.
Of course, I come from an era where that's all we had. We didn't have any video games. We just had Monopoly and...
Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, yeah, classic.
I think Trivial Pursuit is a bit after my time because, it'd be Cluedo, Scrabble, Mousetrap.
Oh, Mousetrap.
Kaplunk.
Hungry Hippos.
Kaplunk is amazing.
Yeah.
The good stuff.
And they still... I mean, how long have they been selling that stuff for? I mean,
since
50s?
The dawn of time.
I know. Yeah, definitely.
Nice one. It's time for some news, and then I think we're going to dive back into the modular history between you two, and then I want to quiz you, Mark, so prepare yourself.
Okie doke.
Be prepared. There's a teenage engineering product that actually I think we missed. Did you know they made a pin matrix?
No, I didn't.
Have you seen this guy? It's weird. So I can only assume by the pictures I've seen that it was made for that terrible fold-your-own metal weird modular thing that didn't sell at all and everybody hated. But the last batch is now available, even though I wasn't aware they did a first batch. So it bolts onto the back of the, whatever they call them, well, the POM400 series of modules. Either way, they're foldy red and yellow modular systems that they did. So you can patch without patch cables. I can only imagine that's the most niche product they've made in a company that already makes tons of niche products, because nobody bought the modular, and I assume nobody's really going to be buying these patch matrices. Either way, if you're one of the few people who own one of these, it's your last chance to buy.
Yeah, I haven't seen one of those in the shop in forever.
Yeah. Some excellent comments on this particular article. That was terrible. I try not to judge, but wow, that is super annoying. Brilliant. Obviously, lots of teenage engineering fans there. In better news, Bufaco, one of my favourite companies because they gave me free things and I made videos for them and it was great, have a new module which I think they might have teased before, because it seems familiar to me. Either way, it's called Noise Plethora, a noise generator with analog filtering in there, and it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So let me tell you about it. You've got three channels and a bunch of different algorithms that you can choose from to generate your noise, and you have an analog filter per channel with low pass, band pass, high pass for your shaping. And because you've got your CV inputs, as you would imagine, it's going to be great for all sorts of percussion stuff. If you want to add envelopes to your filters, you can get your drums happening. But you've got kind of a processing section at the bottom with outputs called gritty, filtered, and white. So I think that's going to give you an idea of the kind of sounds you can get out of it. If you like your droney, distorted, angry stuff, I'm sure it will work for you, but probably a good utility. Next one, we have a small DIY product from Arcadia Electronics, which is a tribute to Italian 60s organs, which it seems super niche again.
I can't immediately think of any Italian 60s organs. I'm sure there are.
I think it's going to be not for everybody. Let's put it that way. But it's super cheap. Has a little button chromatic keyboard and it makes noises.
In fact, wouldn't that be, is it Bull Tempi? Didn't they make organs?
The Farfisa is one that most people will have heard of.
Okay.
Other than that, I can't think of any.
I'm sure, you know, you've got the Yamaha PSRE type.
Those horrible things.
And then Casio do a similar thing. Yeah. As I say, I'm sure that, and I can't remember how long ago, it was quite some time ago, but I'm sure there was a company called Bull Tempi that...
Nobels.
I could be making this up.
Nobels over here.
I recognise the name.
Yeah, and it sounds Italian, doesn't it? Sort of a hideous thing that you would have in your lounge.
Do you know Richard Devine?
Yes.
Not personally, but
I wish we did.
Follow him on Instagram.
Yeah,
he put up some crazy new video with that microgasm thing that you wanted.
The hologram microcosm that we spoke about last week.
Yeah, the delay pedal.
Yeah.
Well, he's had some custom work done, and no, he hasn't had plastic surgery. Somebody's made him something Matrix Brute alike, but it's a chassis for the Pulsar 32, the Lyra, and the sequencer from Soma.
So it's a Soma Labs chassis.
Soma Labs chassis workstation machine thing, and it's just got a cheeky little Strymon magneto on the side because you can.
What's he got in there? One of each?
Yeah, just one of each, and then there's a keyboard and pitch and mod stuff, which is an interesting choice given that's not really how you Soma. To be honest, it's supposed to be a bit weird and obscure, but it's definitely a cool looking thing. So it's a custom build by, let me find the chap, I'm not going to try and pronounce it, but Aeronac, I think, is the company.
Mark and I were just discussing this only yesterday, I believe. He was saying, have you seen this? In fact, you sent me the link of the Richard Devine. I don't know what the other device. He was using the hologram microcosm, but it was looked like a hedgehog. They were sort of plucking. It was like metal spike. But we were just commenting that he's at that stage and has been for quite some time where people just shower him with equipment.
Pretty much.
Mostly he doesn't have to pay for anything.
The title of the video is, it sort of looks like it's trying to say squid urchin. Maybe.
That makes sense. Urchin side of things. It looks like a sea urchin.
Damn, that's cool. So I assume it's got some kind of contact mic in that little wooden body or something. And then you kind of get in the spines.
Yeah.
Well, he starts to bring out all different implements, knives and all sorts.
And then the microcosm's just giving it that wonderful...
Well, yeah. I saw that video and I watch a lot of the Richie Devine stuff, as a lot of people do. But that particular video caught my attention and I thought I'd send it to Pete. He'd appreciate that. Anyway, I'd sent it. I was saying, have you watched the video? Oh, no, I haven't had time. I haven't seen it. And then I came around here and in the background, he's got the demo video for the... What's it? The micro...
It's the hologram micro... Microcosm. Hologram's the company, Microcosm's the product.
So I came around here yesterday and the YouTube video was playing in the background, and I was like, this is the one that Richie Devine was playing with. So suddenly, from me not really having too much of a kit list at the moment, I've suddenly just gone right to the top.
Well, it's just a hazard of being near Pete. And he's just like, oh,
and it's
seen
like,
this?
Well, how much is it, Pete? I said, what is it, 500 quid? He's like, yeah, 500 quid. Everything's 500 quid. Yep. So that's 500 quid, 500. So that was something else that I'm going to have to pay out for in the future, but a great thing for sure.
Indeed. So we've visited Soma in this particular Richard Devine-y thing, but they have a new release, which is called The Rumble of Ancient Times, for some reason. The Rote, it's an 8-bit noise synth and sequencer with a couple of touchpads. And I assume, I haven't actually looked for a price, it's probably going to be relatively cheap because it's just kind of a PCB and that's your lot.
Kind of reminded me of that Korg stuff.
Oh, the thing that's actually super cool with the multi-engine in it?
Well, they've got several because they've got a...
Oh, do they have more than one thing?
There's a guitar pedal they do, which is really overpriced. Well, maybe it's not. Hmm. There's about three items in the range, let's say.
Yeah, I've got to look these up. What are they called?
I don't know if the guitar pedal is based on one of those sort of modern valves, you know, the new valves or what they're called.
New tubes.
New tubes, that's it. The modern new tubes.
There's a Plankton Electronic module, drive module that has new tubes in it, which is pretty cool. Korg NTS-1, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the effects unit.
So what's the other
unit?
Thing?
There's a...
It's the NewTekt.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
There's about three items in that range.
Oh, yeah. The ODS NewTube thingy and distortion for guitars, Korg NewTekt ODS. Oh, yeah, so it's a kit for the pedal. Okay, cool. I totally missed that. That's kind of neat.
The Soma Labs thing kind of looks like that.
No, it definitely has that vibe where it's, you know, all the controls are mounted to the other side of the main PCB or something.
Yeah, and they're just little surface mount switches that just sit on top.
Yeah, yeah. So they say capable of generating dense noisescapes and rhythmic patterns of glitch and is surprising and baffling. So it just sounds like another Soma thing.
Do we have a price?
We do, €130. So it's not terrible, but it's also, maybe it's a bit for a PCB.
Do you have to put it together yourself, or does it come constructed, or is it a bit like the Korg in that respect?
I think it's pre-built.
Okay.
Yeah, because, I mean, there wouldn't be much else to do since it's all pre-surface mounted and they can't expect...
Well, the Korg is as well, but you've kind of got to screw it together, haven't you?
Yeah, maybe you got to attach the backplate and that's it. But it runs on three AAAs for 130 hours.
Yeah.
Quite nice. Yeah. Looks pretty cool and sounds pretty Soma if you're into that kind of thing, which I think I am. Ooh. While I'm thinking of Soma Labs, Ian, who was on the podcast a while ago, part of Void Null, has a gig this Friday that I'm going to, so I shall be reporting back on how Void Null went. I'm hoping they are allowed to have more volume this time, because when I went with Luke, they were really lacking. The venue just didn't turn them up, and it wasn't really any impact.
They might have had a limiter in the building, so they would have lost power.
They don't.
Okay. Where are they playing this Friday?
It was the West End Centre when it was really quiet. This one is some pub in Alton somewhere, so it could go either way.
Seems like a quite incongruous...
For Void Null, yeah. Not
a pub.
Not quite their place. We'll see. I don't really know anything about the venue, but we shall find out. We shall find out. A couple of Eurorack modules to quickly look at. One, which is something I've been kind of vaguely keeping an eye out for quite a while, and I don't know if there are many options outside of some really expensive modules that also do other things. So this is just a USB MIDI host and CV and gate module. So you just plug in something like just any really cheap USB MIDI keyboard, and then you've got CV and gate out. You can get that on things like the Squarp Hermod, and there's that Endorphins one. Shuttle Control, I think it's called, but they're all, you know, £300-400, and this one hopefully should be a lot cheaper. It's from North Coast Synthesis, who do the Leapfrog filter, which is super strange and weird, and fingers crossed it'll be a bit cheaper. Let's see if they've got a guideline price. No, they do not, because it's still a prototype. How dare they? Please, like under 150. That would be nice for once. Just so you don't have to faff around with also powering your controller and a MIDI converter and a bunch of other stuff. Lastly, do either of you know Division 6?
No, I don't.
They do some pretty cool stuff. They are the business card sequencer and the business card synthesizer. I shall show you some pictures here. So roughly credit card, business card sized and not very thick at all. But you power them with, I think you can either get plus 5 volts from your modular and pop that in, or you can battery power them with just a little kind of lead or something. But they're super small and super cool. The sequencer, you have just a single octave and I think up to 64 steps pattern chaining, and it's really cheap and really, really quite cool. And then business card synthesizer, I think it's digital with an analog filter. Let me check that. No idea. It makes noises and it's business card sized, but they've released, well, they did the dual business card sequencer in a Eurorack module. So you could daisy chain those to have 128 steps if you felt like it. But now they've gone for a little sequencer on the bottom and synthesizer on the top. So that's a really cool little tiny synth voice thing. And I think you can get those DIY. They're super cheap and super cool. So quite a good starter option.
Have I seen those on Thonk?
Think so. Let's have an investigation.
Seems very familiar. Do we have some prices? Or I expect if you look
I hope we do. Let's find out.
£500.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So on Thonk, the Division 6 dual sequencer kit is 79 Great British Squids without the VAT. So that's really not too bad. And I don't imagine the price would be too dissimilar with the synth on top.
I mean, it suits the sort of people who like the micro, they like the pocket operators, they like all that type of thing, they like the little... I just find it... I mean, I haven't got fat fingers, but I do like a knob.
Love it. They can be a little fiddly, but certainly for people like me who don't have much cash to splash for a big knob, they're quite efficient in that way. Okay, that's it for the news that I've turfed off the tinterwebs this week. We were talking Modulia. Listeners may not know, Pete, your case, the Moth, is actually the Moth V2.
Yes.
The Moth V1 resides with you, does it not, Mark?
That's right. I mean, it's the one that still resides in the UK and it's going to reside here for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. There's just no room for it in the new place in Sofia. However, I've managed to sneak a few key modules into the hand luggage, so they will be coming back with me because I've got that skiff case that Pete built for me the last time I was here a few years ago.
Yeah.
And that's fully maxed out with extra drawfuls of modules, but I'm going to take a few more out of the Moth. It's just such a shame. It's a beautiful thing and it will be back with me again one day, just not yet. We just need somewhere slightly bigger to house it.
Soon.
Otherwise, I will get into a stage and it will look like Pete's studio. That's my problem.
A good problem to have.
A good problem to have, yeah. Just a bit of an overwhelming problem, I think.
So, when you saw Pete's mostly Pittsburgh and the Metropolis row, was that it's done, the rabbit hole begins? What was your modular journey like?
I think I'd already decided when I'd actually spoken to Pete at the party he was doing without actually hearing it, because I'd done a bit of research into it and had an understanding of how great it was, and I wanted to find out a bit more about it. But yeah, coming around here and hearing the Pittsburgh oscillator going through the Metropolis, and it was kind of giving this 303 squelchy tonal harmonic sound that was just, I want more, give me some more. So I looked into getting an oscillator and a filter and an LFO, and I went to, and I was trying to think of the company, the first ones that I bought, those are the yellow ones, Sonic, the ones with the tubes that come out the top.
Sonicware?
No, it's, I was meant to look at it before I came round.
Are they still going?
No, they don't do anything anymore.
Metasonics?
That's the one.
Nice.
So I saw a YouTube video where they actually built a unit which had an oscillator and a filter, and this guy was kind of patching it in and getting this kind of sort of techno rhythm, but which was very tonal and harmonic and exactly what I like. And that's what kind of forced me into having a look at that particular manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I found them from a company in London and they supplied me with all three of them. And I thought, that's all I need. That's all. I've got an oscillator.
Famous last words for anybody.
Exactly. And I said to Pete about it. I said, that's all I want. You know, I had an audio interface as well, so I could kind of link it up to the computer and record it, which is really important in what I do. I always love to have a jam and by itself, but the most important thing for me with modular was being able to record in stuff and render it down and use it in the music that I'm doing. it just rabbit holed from there. I mean, it went, Pete said, no, that won't be enough, Mark. It just won't be enough. You will
if
buy
only
more.
You'd listened.
Yeah, it won't be enough. So I've managed to kind of pull it back a little bit now. And now I have other rabbit holes, and one of them being Acoustica Audio.
Not familiar.
So it's recorded analog equipment, so desks and compressors and EQs and all of the really very expensive high-end stuff. But they use convolution. Yeah, sampling. So for me, it changed everything within the studio because I didn't have all of my modular and kind of my cool bits of equipment out with me. Someone introduced me to just one of the particular plugins that they do, which is a mastering limiter and EQ and a few other things as well. And they have these fantastic sales. Anyway, long story short, I bought one of them and now I own everything that they do. And they do this particular plugin, which is called Nebula, which was the company's first designed plugin. And from that, there are numerous third-party companies now, Alex B, Tim P, Cupwise, who do these fantastic libraries of reverbs, delays, and it's all analog, modeled and recorded, so you really do get that authentic sound, and it's very, very cool, and I love it.
Nice.
Very heavy on the CPU.
Oh yeah,
but fantastic. I mean, it really is very, very nice bits of software. I've never heard emulations or anything that's ever sounded like it, so I've fallen down that rabbit hole, and after I kind of stopped buying modular, I started to buy
go plugins.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one thing finishes and another thing starts, so that's kind of where I am at the moment. So I've got my little modular setup out there, and then that married up with the Acoustica sound is just found myself in a good place. It's
nice.
Very happy with the
Let's
setup.
Dig into the workflow a little bit.
Sure.
I found when I had modular that I thought, oh yeah, I'm going to try and make this, and it never worked, and what I actually ended up making was something I would never have considered before, and it was great. You know, kind of somewhat of a discovery, a musical discovery. Did your modular end up going in your normal drum and bass kind of pathway, or did you suddenly start going a bit left field and thought, ooh, bit of inspiration there?
Yeah, I mean, it was all about when I first got the setup, I'd turn it on and play around with it and not record anything.
Ooh,
and
the cardinal sin.
Exactly. And I had my good friend, you know, Ed, who was, you know, my kind of musical partner with Cause for Concern, who's unfortunately not with us anymore. We kind of delved into wanting to render as much stuff, usable stuff that we could. So whether that be some squelchy techno-y bass line or some kicks or hats or anything really. But what would happen is I'd turn on my system on the Moth. 3 hours later, I've had a great time in the headphones and nothing's recorded.
No.
But I've had a great time. And then I'd speak to Ed and I was like, oh, I made this amazing sound. And I was running it through here and it was kind of doing this and doing that. He's like, can I hear it? I was like, oh, no, I didn't record it. And this was a common thread that kind of followed me for about a year until I kind of got into remembering to hit the record.
Yeah.
It did take me in lots of directions. I mean, modular is, you don't really go in there with any kind of set plan. You pick an oscillator or something you want to play around with, and it kind of starts from there and evolves into something you really weren't expecting. But what I loved about the Moth was I could have a patch up and I'd leave it on overnight, but turn the volume down, and then I'd get up in the morning and turn it back up, and it's just going off and doing something totally different that it was a few hours ago. So it was just like a living, breathing thing, and it's I just fell in love with
one of my favorite YouTubers. Do you know State Azure?
I don't know.
You might want to have a look if you're feeling ambient one day, but similar in scope to Moths 1 and 2. Huge kind of arcing case, but they live stream quite often and they'll set up like a generative patch and they'll just leave it streaming itself for a couple of hours, and obviously it's doing that big old evolvey thing.
Okay, that sounds cool. Interesting. Yeah, I was always a big fan of that anyway, but in back to your question, did I ever go in there with this sort of set plan? No.
The best way.
Oh, absolutely. And some of the little gems, I mean, we used to take 30-minute, 40-minute, 50-minute renders, I mean, as you did as well, Pete. And then suddenly, 35.4 minutes in, there's that little bit of gold in there, and you just pull that out, and then that's kind of the basis for taking a new idea to the next level. And that's what I found when I used to meet up with Pete. He'd kind of do all these different renders and recordings, and suddenly there'd just be that bit of magic in there, and that's where we take the idea and kind of try and develop it into some of the Rack Addicts music that we wrote a few years ago.
What a perfect segue. Thank you so much, Pete. Mark, what were Rack Addicts things? Who are we? Why are we?
I'd been struggling away. I'm not great. I mean, I've said before, I'm not great with getting drums sounding good on modular, but I'm not great at really getting really good drums.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt I really could do with working with a drummer. To be honest, the next best thing to a real drummer is a drum and bass producer, because obviously the bass is important as well, but the drums are so integral to the production. And as I say, I kind of ran into Mark, and then he was quite keen to come around, and I just thought, this is great. And I sort of played him a few things, and some of it was pretty mediocre, to be honest. And some, you know, there's little bits and pieces, and there's things that would catch Mark's ears, and he would be sort of enthusiastic to take it away and sort of work on it. And Mark's definitely a person that can spend an inordinate amount of time in front of his door, put the hours in that you really need to do. And unfortunately, I get bored really quickly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, know that feel.
Yeah, where Mark will, you know, you will easily do.
Yeah, that's it. Sit back there, just have the compliments raining on you. It's fine.
Mark will easily do an 8-hour stretch, you know, if he's
I mean, it's you know,
if it needs to be done.
Power.
Absolutely. I mean, it's from our early career, especially working with Ed in the early stages of Cause for Concern. I mean, you know, the 8-16, we used to go for a couple of days doing it, but I mean, we were a lot younger kind of thing, and it was, you could kind of brush it off and get on with it. But if there's a vibe in the studio, then you don't really want to kind of sleep on it.
Yeah.
You want to carry it through until you can't kind of keep your eyes open anymore. So, you know, I'd come around here and Pete would play me these things and I'd be like, yeah, that's okay. And then he, you know, obviously he's just a wizard with on the keys and playing particular chords, and every now and again there'd be that little special moment. It's just like, yeah, that's really good, Pete, you know, I'll take that away. And I'd already have like a little idea of how I'm going to piece it together. And it wasn't necessarily, I wasn't doing drum and bass tracks, because I thought the music that Pete was kind of playing and I was listening to didn't deserve some fast drumming. It was either kind of a 4-to-the-floor feel, I felt, or some kind of breakbeaty kind of vibe to it. And that's what I kind of took away. And I'd kind of just keep his idea as original as possible. Or he might say, it's not perfect, I need to redo the MIDI notes, leave it with me, come on, like, I'll get this right. And then it's like, well, Pete's 2 weeks now, come on, mate. You know, it's like, I want to get on with this, because I kept on hearing the tune in my head.
Yeah.
Anyway, it would always get there in the end. And I'd kind of get a little idea together, and then we'd have these days in the week where we'd meet up either on a Wednesday or a Thursday or something like that, and I'd bring round what I had, and obviously we'd load it up in the studio and kind of sort of delve into it a little bit further and push it along, and we'd sort of finished 4 tracks, which are unreleased at the moment, exclusive, and we're looking at possibly publishing them in the future, for sure. And then we've got idea after idea after idea, and obviously coming around and being back in the UK, he played me a few of his new works that he's done, and yeah, I mean, it's just great. I mean, it sounds fantastic. You know, very all kind of...
Yeah, not really sure. We were always problematic with genre. We sort of do this stuff and then go, what is it?
Well, it doesn't matter, because if you put progressive at the start, it can be anything and nobody cares.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where we were.
It was just whatever. I think it was just more about meeting up and having a bit of a laugh and just sort of enjoying those little bits of gold and those segments where you can kind of be creative. And yeah, I'm looking forward to at least publishing these 4 tracks, because... Pete's like, we've got to get these ones out first. And I'm like, okay, I have waited a while, but, you know, as and when, all good things and all that.
It's that gentleman that the techno guy that you met up at the... It wasn't Brighton Modular, it was the one in Kingston.
Oh, Bodica.
Yeah.
So Al for used to be an instrumental, and he's, you know, kind of one of my idols who I look up to, especially with the new style of techno music that he does. And
But he said that to you because you've got that techno album sort of waiting in the wings.
Yes.
And he sort of said, well, it doesn't matter. If no one's heard it, then it's new music, even though it could be 5 years old, but it's still new music.
Yeah, good point of view. Yeah.
Well, this is exactly the conversation that I have with him. He said, well, Mark, I've got, you know, music that I'm kind of sitting on and I kind of get bored with it. And then I load it back up and have a listen and think, no, that sounds really decent, and then it would kind of see the light of day, but it might be five, six, 7 years old. You kind of have to sit on it and kind of let it mature, and you know, there's something about it you didn't like about it 5 years ago, but suddenly there's something about it you love now.
But I found with the stuff that's completed, you don't hear it for ages, you come back to it and you go, no, it really is really good. It's difficult. I mean, the problem we initially had, because publishing it was problematic in the respect that the people we took it to basically said it was a bit too commercial.
Mm.
And that was the initial problem, wasn't it?
Definitely, so they said that a bit too commercial and not really what they dealt with. They were very kind of specialised in drum and bass and dubstep at the time.
Yeah.
But this was a little bit much for them to do because they didn't feel that they could do a good enough job with it, you know. So they gave us some other people to try, you know, kind of didn't really work out too well, or we didn't get the feedback that we yeah. really wanted from it. But then there's a couple of new distribution companies that we're looking into, or you've been looking yeah. into them, and they look like good possibilities.
The original publisher said to us is that you would spend more money promoting it than you would actually get back. And because they're basically businesses and they look at everything
yeah, yeah.
at a sort of a profit and loss sort of basis, that they felt it was a futile exercise, and they quoted other instances when they'd gone in that direction before and they spent way more, as I say, on publishing than they actually got in return, which we weren't that phased about because we just wanted to publish it.
Yeah.
But
I think from their point of view, they were looking at the fact that because of the style of music that it was, it's such a broad and huge market to mm-hmm. to kind of feed into and to be noticed, because, you know, you've got your high-end players and your labels who, you know, outsell everything else, and a new player to the market doesn't really stand a chance unless you're willing to throw a hell of a lot of money, and then you're not guaranteed.
There we are. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the, what was it, the oral history of Rack Addicts. Thank you so much. You know how we round off these podcasts? Have you been prepared, Mark? Here we go. It's the miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. As you can tell, we didn't think of a better title. But you brew over there, you think of something miscellaneous and multimedia related to recommend to our listeners for them to chew on until next week. Well, I'm ready to go, so I'll give you some time. Have either of you heard of One Square Inch?
No, I haven't.
Excellent. Well, this is a conservation project that I think field recordists would be very interested in. This is a project by a guy called George Hampton in America, the Olympic National Park. He is trying to preserve silence. So it's a project to attempt to get at the governments and various people and try and do things like protected air space and sort out construction and things, basically so that they can protect land and keep it away from human noise and interference, so that people can go and explore, well, it's a national park, spaces where they can really just hear nature and not the distant M25, as is the problem in most areas around here, or the A3 potentially. There's not too much media I can recommend, and I recommend, and I say the word recommend a few times. Do check out the website onesquareinch.org, because I think it's very interesting and a worthwhile cause. There's a bunch of sort of partner organizations who will do kind of event stuff. Like, have you heard of forest bathing?
I haven't, but I kind of have a perception of what that might be.
You can figure out what it is exactly from the name, but they'll do...
I assume they keep their clothes on.
They do, thankfully. Maybe some people don't. But yeah, enjoying just the forest in silence and consuming
nature.
Isn't
that just called going for a walk in the woods?
It is, but they needed to market it, so they gave it a new name. But it's all about that kind of thing, and a lot of field recordist type people are into it as well, for obvious reasons. I think the chap, Gordon Hampton, is a field recordist or something. Anyway, onesquareinch.org. Pete, you ready to go?
Yes, I've gone back to my usual YouTube mm-hmm. type of recommendations. I don't know about you two gentlemen, but I like to keep up with my geological news.
Can't say that I do, Pete, no.
You know, you know, various things... earthquakes, volcanoes, that type of thing.
Right.
Generally, what's making the news. I mean, particularly at the moment, there's a long-lasting volcanic eruption that's been happening in the Canary Islands on La Palma, mm-hmm. which has unfortunately devastated many homes and businesses and displaced thousands of people. And it's continued at the moment. I think if they get to the 10th of December, it'll be the longest eruption they've had on record.
Oh, wow.
And obviously they most probably had longer ones in prehistory or
yeah.
whatever. But so the longest one since the 17th century. Anyway, there's a particular YouTube channel where I can facilitate my requirement to
need for
get
geological
my geological news.
News.
And it's called GeoHub.
Okay.
And they're very brief, short videos There has been a lot about the La Palma eruption because it's been ongoing for quite considerable time, and the gentleman that does the channel has been doing some updates. But then on other occasions, he'll feature just talking about various volcanoes in all sorts of parts of the world. Some of them are erupting, some of them are dormant. He's very knowledgeable. He doesn't just talk about the eruption. He explains why it's erupting in a particular way, yeah, and potentially the effects, and he'll give timestamps. So this particular volcano erupted 20,000 years ago, it produced this particular type of eruption. This is the material that it produces or had produced. This is the evidence for it. Here are the aerial shots, etc., etc. Again, videos 5 to 10 minutes, that type of duration. It's a bit esoteric in some respects.
Just a smidge.
Because it goes in, not super deep, but it goes in relatively deep. It's not just a cursory, yeah, the volcano's still erupting, so to speak. And, I dip in quite regularly.
Would not have called that one.
So nice. That is my recommendation for this week, GeoHub on YouTube.
I really wish I had something as interesting to say as that. But all I can recommend at the moment is, you know, if you're packing your studio up, definitely double wrap your, you know, bubble wrap for sure. Use fragile tape and mark the boxes. So that's kind of where I've been at this week. I mean, there is one thing, and it's a bit of a self-promotion, I guess.
I was going to actually ask you to self-promote,
okay,
please.
Well, so what I have been doing at the moment, I've got a new artist from America called Josh, his name is, and he goes under the name of Anteris. And I've been working with him for the last couple of 3 months on getting a new music project together, mm-hmm, for the label. And he's kind of sent me a few tracks over. We'd agreed on an idea for the release. Anyway, in the last week, I've been working on the last track to finish up the EP. And he sent it over to me the other day. And it's a very nice way to round up the EP for a new project by an artist that I really think you should pay attention to. His name's Anteris. He'll be featuring on the label next year. And I highly recommend you listen to his music. It's very film track. It reminds me of Blade Runner,
oh, nice,
soundtracks, you know, with crazy amen breaks and live drum work. And as you know, I'm a fan of my drum work. And I was massively impressed by that. So Anteris, new EP called Into the Dust, forthcoming on Cause for Concern in the new year.
Nice one. Can you spell the name for us?
Anteris.
Lovely stuff. And I'm going to make you promote something else. If you had to ask our listeners to go and listen to one or two things that are Caesar or Cause for Concern more personally, what would be your top choices?
Our most successful track that we did was for a label called Virus Recordings, and it's one that always people come back to us, and it's classed as a drum and bass classic, so right, to speak. And that came out probably 10 years ago, something like that, maybe a little bit less. And I'd say it's our biggest grossing tune, our most popular tune. Mm-hmm. It's one that people recognise us for. And that came out on Virus Recordings, and it's called Peep Show.
Nice one.
And I think any of the other tracks that I've written with the late, great Optive, you know, who was, mm-hmm, my musical partner for 20 years, and you know, he's no longer with us. So I advise you to listen to anything that I wrote with him or to listen to any of the music that he's written. It's fantastic. Check it out.
Lovely stuff. If you want to find Caesar, it's CZA. Optive is OPTIV. You've been listening to an entire trio of Rack Addicts for the first time. Come back for episode 102, but have a great week. Farewell.